Hi, this is Stan Collymore.
And you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me tonight, I've got Shane Lees.
Hello.
And Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
Oh, sex to my ears. Hello. I'm great now. I've heard of a good evening.
That really cheers us up on an evening, doesn't it? Alright, I'll start with a couple of quick stories. Philip Lahm has announced that he's retiring. He recently played his 500th game for Bayern Munich. He'll be leaving at the end of the season. I saw the club have come out and said that they're surprised by it. But how good a player do you guys think he was?
One of the best players of all time. You can't underrate not only how versatile he was, how consistently good, and how people talk about Bayern Munich dominating the league and all that lot, but you can't be an average player and captain that team and lead them the way he's done. And Germany, he's just achieved everything, more or less, in football. So how can he not be a legend?
He was asked to play in during his career, sort of towards the end, in like three different positions.
Hmm.
And each one, he then became one of the best in the world at.
Hmm.
But, you know, that says a huge amount, that he was so versatile to be able to play either the fullback roles or as defensive midfield and make it his own.
Mm. And when people talk about fullback, like, you know, legends of, you know, playing left back, right back, people always talk about players like Roberto Carlos, but Carlos was good going forward, but he was a bit naff at the back. You talk about the other legends and there's always that, yeah, they were good, but they were only fullbacks. There's almost that tinge to it. With Lahm, it's not he was only a fullback, he was just that bloody good.
I think the only comparable one for me is probably Maldini. He's probably a comparable player. I think he'll go down as a similar sort of legend to Maldini did.
I think he's probably got the slight advantage in the sense that I think he played more games, didn't he? And he was a bit more... I
mean, yeah, Maldini had that longevity thing, a bit like what Giggs sort of has.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's an early age to retire.
I think he's only 32, 33,
eh? I think people get a bit too wound up with the whole age thing, don't they? Because it's not how old you are, it's how many games you played. It shouldn't be shocking that players like Rooney and Owen have started to decline as early as they've declined because of how early they started, how much they were involved in the international games, how much they were involved in the league games. You take a look at someone like Sergio Ramos, he'll retire by 32. He's got 140-odd caps or something like that. So you throw that in with the amount of, with the fact he's going to be playing every single league game for the club, and it is just, it's got to be completely draining. But if you're someone, you know, maybe like Teddy Sheringham, where you're playing very regularly, you're occasionally getting injured, but you're not completely exerting yourself in every single game because you're a different kind of player. You're not going to wear yourself out so quickly, so you can go on for a very long time. Ryan Giggs is a similar one, which he sort of slowly but surely moved more central so he didn't have to do as much running. And they sort of, tamed that a little bit. I think when you're someone like Lahm and you're playing in a fullback position, which is just one of the most demanding positions on the pitch, and you played, 500 plus games for club, you're a centurion for your country, you're going to be knackered.
Yeah. I think the other thing...
He played 320 games for Bayern.
He played his 500th game the other week. He did 320 in the league, but 500 total.
For the second team and for Stuttgart.
Oh, right. I read that for Bayern...
And Germany is a national team.
Mm. I think you don't measure it in the sense of... It's a bit like a heart. You don't measure the heart in age, you measure it in how many beats it's had. You don't measure a footballer in age, you measure them in how many games they played and how demanding those games were. Philip Lahm was not playing in a position or a league where he could really sit back. Because he was always playing under managers who said, you do bloody everything and you are running all day long. Add to that you're in a fullback position where you're doing that anyway. It's always going to be tricky to keep going after, I don't know, 33, 34?
I think the other thing is he wants to retire like being at the top of his game rather than, you know, he could quite easily get another club in, you know, China, America, wherever. And he's a family man. He wants to spend time with his family, which is admirable. And I think I think he wants to retire at the top rather than having a decline, as well as the other factor.
I agree, because you look at people like Xavi, who they could have ended their career being a one-club player, and yes, he's a legend, someone like Xavi, but it's always that little overhang. You go, oh, you maybe should have just gone a year earlier, mate. And then he's probably looking at people like Schweinsteiger as well and going, again, it's that element of you could have been an absolute legend start to finish, but there's that little bit hanging on where it's all a little bit questionable. And yeah, I think there is real merits for leaving when you're at the top of your game, especially if you've done everything, you've won everything, you're an absolute legend of the club, of your country. Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't quit then, because, well, what's to keep going for? A big contract in Qatar or something? He doesn't strike me as the kind of player who would care about that kind of thing.
No, exactly.
You know what his nickname was?
Go on.
The Magic Dwarf.
That's fitting.
I didn't realise just how small he was.
Yeah, he's like 5'7", isn't he?
Obviously he still is. He's only 5'7".
Still, fantastic player. Another player as well, Rivaldo. I read today that his son, Rivaldinho, has joined Dinamo Bucharest. So, interesting to see how he gets on. I know he moved to Portugal earlier in his career and he failed there. Ended up going back to Brazil, but now he's at Dinamo Bucharest. So, saw that.
So long as no one kicks a ball at his knee, he'll be fine.
On another sort of great level player, not at the same level as Lam, but one that's looking to move over to China is Pepe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I think that's always a bit more understandable, though, because you look at a club like Real Madrid, and the players who move to Real Madrid don't just move there because it's the biggest club in the world. They move there for money and the lifestyle and the reputation and all that kind of thing. And when you factor that in, it's a bit... You can kind of understand why they'll go for one last payday. But I think if you're someone who's loyal to Bayern for your entire career, especially in Germany, it's a different kind of career. You're in it for a different kind of reason. It's not massively different. Most modern footballers are still kind of, you know, cut from the same cloth. But I do think that's a slightly different situation and a bit more understandable as to why he would want to do that and someone like Lahm wouldn't.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to performance of the week. I'll give you the four nominees and you can tell us who you think deserves to win. So I've got Eden Hazard for his performance against Arsenal, Romelu Lukaku for scoring four goals, I believe, for Everton at the weekend, Jesus for scoring twice, and Januzaj for his two assists in Sunderland's 4-0 win. I think you probably guess who my thoughts are, but what do you two think?
Hazard. I'm sorry, but if you're Lukaku and you're going up against Bournemouth, you know there's goals in the game for you. If you're Januzaj and you're going up against Crystal Palace, you know you can do something. And I can't even remember who the other person is.
Well, the other one's my pick.
Well, good, yeah, Gabriel Jesus. And yeah, they're two decent goals and it's a decent performance, but it's nothing groundbreaking. If you're Eden Hazard and you are as good as you are and you sit a team like that, as good as they are, everyone slates Arsenal. Let's not forget they're a fantastic team. He sat that entire team on the floor. And it was a ridiculous performance. I mean, look at the strength of him. He's tiny, but it's not the same. That was a big team performance. Hazard almost did that single-handedly. That goal that he scored was ridiculous. It was absurd. You might be able to say, okay, if he scores that against Plymouth away, it's kind of understandable. Or if he scores it on FIFA, it's reasonable. It was ridiculous.
No, I agree. I think Hazard's goal was fantastic. But because I'm a big fan, I'm sorry, but I went for Januzaj. Probably my unbiased opinion, Hazard I should have went for. You went for Jesus then, Hero?
Yeah, just the impact that he's had for City since he came in. Okay. He's been there since, the second week of January, and he's, you know, displaced one of the best strikers in the world straight away as coming in. And he's, you know, he's banging them in. He's, you know, he's not gone in there and shirked his ability, performances. He's, you know, week in, week out, he's the best player on the City pitch.
Going on, though, with Aguero, do you think he'll end up leaving the club? And if so, where do you think he'd end up?
I think he'll go back to Atletico Madrid. I think, even though the chairman of Atletico Madrid's come out today and said Griezmann's not moving, he's got a release clause in his contract. If somebody comes in and pays $85 million, he's gone.
Yeah, but Aguero can't leave to Atletico Madrid this season, at the end of the season. They've got a transfer ban.
Yeah, because that'll stay in place.
Probably for Atletico, probably not for Real Madrid. There's always a way around it. I can't. I there's always a thing with Argentinian strikers. For some reason, they never quite seem to settle anywhere but a Spanish-speaking country. Not properly. There's always that hint that they're going to leave when they're sort of, you know, very. It's the Tevez situation. They're going to leave when they're still very good, but coming to more or less the end of their peak. I don't know if he'll. If we're talking about whether or not he'll replace Aguero in the team, it's very possible that this is just a case of Guardiola doing something different because Man City are not performing at all at the level he wants them to. So you've got to change something. Why not change your striker? That's probably the biggest position you can have an impact in. In terms of whether or not he'll be able to.
Well, with the other big one, aren't you, of keeper?
Hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, that was a major thing at the start of the season to really assert his claim on the squad and say, you know, this isn't the old Man City. I think with Gabriel, what's his name, Jesus, I think he'll be very, very good, don't get me wrong. For some reason, he just doesn't strike me as a player who's going to be great. He strikes me as a bit of a Harry Kane kind of player. Everyone's going to say he was very good, he'll get a whole bunch of goals and across seasons, but you'll always go, well, he's not quite the, you know, the really great players, you know, your Messi's, your Neymar's, all that lot. I don't think he'll reach those kinds of levels, but I think he'll reach the level of absolutely solid Premier League goal scorer or whichever country he ends up playing in, 20 goals a season easy.
I think based on that one performance, he scored a couple of tap-ins, then I don't think it's enough to say whether he's going to become this great player or not. I know here is more aware than I am of his performances in Brazil, because I know he was player of the year there, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was player of the year in Brazil. In the Brazil team, he's straight away just like a duck to water for the national team. Mm-hmm. And yeah, back in Brazil, he is rated as big as Neymar already there. They absolutely love him.
I do think he'll be quality. I just don't think he'll be the highest end of quality. He'll be just below the highest end of quality. A bit like how Griezmann, you wouldn't say, is as good as Messi or Ronaldo.
I don't remember. No, that's a hard... Yeah, it's
no, yeah that's what I mean. He will be absolutely top draw, but not. I think when people are going, you know, he can be the best striker in the world, not sure about that. Maybe like third or fourth best.
I would have a bet now that at some point in his career he'll get the FIFA Player of the Year.
I wouldn't argue with that. It's because he's a striker. There's always a pretty good chance if you're a striker.
Because obviously at some point Messi and Ronaldo are going to start dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah, the age cannot keep up with them forever. And there's other players that are going to have to start taking over, and I think he's going to be one of them.
Okay, fair enough. Just going back to the original performance of the week, the results. So the poll's still open, so you can still vote, but at the time of recording, Hazard and Lukaku both have 35% of the vote, Jesus and Januzaj both on 15%, but it is still open, so it could change. Okay, we'll move on. So there's been a bit of news with the FA this week. There's been a potential vote of no confidence in the FA because of a change in governance. I know, Shane, you're our expert on this sort of thing. Do you want to tell us what's going on?
Well, it's a situation where it's about downtime. I mean, you've got Clark, who's sort of almost trying to be noble and say, look, I want to reform and I want to change things and I'll resign if, you know, these people don't approve my reforms, just to say I'm really serious about it. But ultimately, if he's really looking for reform, there's no quicker or more efficient way than having it passed through Parliament. It's one of those ones where he's trying to preserve enough of what the FA is currently, enough of that current system, which is a failing system, frankly. And he's still one of those old boys in the FA, so he's not really trying to reform properly. And he's kind of trying to make it look like he is, just to sort of, I think, save face a little bit when it comes to the fact that if it does reform, he's going to probably be out of a job. It's a good thing if it does go through Parliament and they force through actual meaningful change, because the FA will not change itself. It's a completely institutional thing. It's like FIFA. When everyone's saying, will FIFA actually be able to change itself after you got rid of Blatter? Blatter wasn't the problem. He was the face of the problem, and all the other people around him were the faces of the problem, but it was all the other people that were the big problem. It was the setup of the organisation. It was the infrastructure. It was the rules that existed within your organisation that never meant it could advance itself or actually change away from being a corrupt, useless organisation it actually was. And the FA is a very similar situation where you have to change it top to bottom, but there's too many people in the FA who, if it does change top to bottom, will lose out. And it will be discovered that their jobs are just completely empty, that they are just basically jobs worths, and that there's a lot of money that is just not actually getting to where it's supposed to go, that the FA is far too prioritising media. It's putting too much focus or on the things all around football rather than actual football. And that was epitomised by the fact that the last chairman of the FA was a media guy. That showed exactly what their priorities were. So I think it will be a very good thing if they do reject the reforms in the FA, because then it will force it to go to Parliament, and then it will actually be genuine reforms. It won't be half-assed reforms like Infantino's doing at FIFA. It will be genuine, actual change that will make actual difference. Whether or not that difference and that change is good, because as we know, politicians, they rarely get things completely right, is another question. But if we actually want reform and change, it's got to go through Parliament. So, frankly, I hope the reforms do fail in FIFA and he quits, and we actually get an opportunity to just clean house a little bit.
Okay. That was very enlightening. Have you got any thoughts, Hero?
I pretty much agree with that. I can't really add anything much to it. But obviously, the FA are pretty much as bad as FIFA from top to bottom. The money that goes into the FA is like a black hole. Where does it ever get invested in? Grassroots and such. And it really does need a good clean out, but how it goes about that.
And the big problem with the FA, beyond, you know, the money not getting invested properly and all that, is they don't actually know how to effectively do their jobs. The FA does not actually limit the Premier League. The FA, they don't realise it, I swear, but they have all the power. They're like the Lib Dems in the coalition. All they've got to do is unite and say, actually, we can change everything if we want to. We can stand up to the Premier League. We can force them to go by the rules that will genuinely improve English football if we want to. They just don't do it. And without saying corruption, it's more like white paper corruption. It's legitimate corruption. It's money being said to be invested by the Premier League in the lower leagues, into grassroots. That is, again, it's a token effort. That is hiding the fact that if they made these genuine changes, that it would make a lot of difference. But the FA doesn't want to piss off the Premier League. And to be honest, they like money too much. It's the major problem. And the Premier League provides money. That's got to be one of the big changes. Make the FA at the very least aware that it has a responsibility and a duty to do those changes if it feels that's going to help. Don't just back down and go, no, Premier League has all the power. Oh, they won't release players to the England squad. Make them. You can force them. They genuinely have that power. They're just not using it. So that needs to be a lot more clear with the next FA if we actually do manage to get those proper reforms in.
Okay. Okay, I don't really know what to say to that, to be honest, but yeah, the FA does need more power, I think you're right, I think they do. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see what happens with Parliament and whether Greg Clark does go through with his promise of stepping down if there aren't reforms. We'll move on. So, Shane, this week you're a quizmaster, so you've got the questions, I hope?
Yep, I've got the questions. Now, this is a pretty straightforward one. It's a normal son of a pitch. So one person goes when the other person goes. There's 10 possible answers. So the question is, name the 10 lowest ranked former Premier League sides in the Football League. Ooh, a bit different. Anthony, you're going first.
Okay, so it's teams in the Football League now. So say the team at the bottom of League 2 would be the best answer now, but if they played in the Premier League is the best answer I could give.
That's right.
Right, okay. Premier League, Bolton, because they're definitely in the Premier League. I know they.
Yep, Bolton is one of them.
Blackpool.
Blackpool is another one. You're doing your bees well.
That's a good shout. Portsmouth.
Portsmouth.
Oh, that was my next one.
Yep, good old Portsmouth.
Sheffield United.
Ooh, that is one. Well done. Yep.
So any League One side is okay, because Sheffield United are top of League One.
Yep.
Charlton.
Charlton is another one.
Coventry.
Coventry. You know your stuff.
There can't be many answers left.
Nope, there's only four left.
I know they're at the bottom of the Championship, but I'll have to take punts. I can't think of any. Wigan.
Wigan, well done. That's the highest placed team on the list.
Swindon.
Ooh, well done. Yep, Swindon.
I've got a question.
Yes.
I don't know which answer to give out of. Is it Wimbledon or MK Dons, but depending how you count it?
You can give either. I'll know what you mean.
Wimbledon. I don't know. It depends, because it depends how you... MK Dons is technically...
I will interpret it as the same answer.
Okay, well that...
Yeah, you're wrong.
No. I swear no. Wimbledon were in the...
Wimbledon MK no? Dons. No, then, no.
Oh, all right.
Oldham?
Yes, so that means Hero is the winner. Defeated by a technicality, Anthony. the other team you could have had was Bradford.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Bradford City.
I was trying to think if Luton were, but that was earlier.
Yeah, the full list was Blackpool, Bolton, Bradford, Charlton, Coventry, Oldham, Portsmouth, Sheffield, Swindon and Wigan. That was your list.
Yeah. Good question.
All right, so it's 1-0 to Hero.
Okay, so we'll come back to the quiz later in the show, but that takes us quite nicely onto the next topic I want to discuss, which is teams which might not be playing in the Premier League next season. So I know we want to talk a bit about Swansea and Hull, who have recently changed managers. We'll start with Swansea. They've brought in Paul Clement. What do you make of Clement coming into the club, first of all?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because you would have thought that's almost like a self-damning move. They got rid of Bradley, who they had to get rid of, and they brought in a manager with no Premier League experience, who's just... he doesn't really inspire a whole lot of confidence that everything's going to change and get better and all those kinds of things. But he's come in, and he's not changed...
He didn't manage beforehand in England.
So he was Derby manager, yeah. And then he was... He's Carlo Ancelotti's assistant for quite a while at different clubs, at Bayern and Real and Chelsea.
It's one of those ones, he's not changed massive amounts, but he seems to have just instilled confidence in the way they're playing into Swansea. And I think you look at Swansea as a club, that isn't a team I think that should be down there. That the players they've got, you wouldn't immediately look at that and go, yeah, that's a bottom three side. You might think, okay, they might be in a scrap, but you don't think that that's a side that should be going down. Now, they made some very bad decisions off the pitch, and this is a club that everyone's always praised for making very good decisions off the pitch. So they brought in a manager who didn't really know too much what he was doing in the Premier League, and Bob Bradley, what's the other guy, the Italian guy, Widolina, it was all sort of questionable as to whether or not he should stay on after that, you know, first season. I think they were just ticking along, really. And this signing of a new manager, I don't think it was actually intended as, you know, a game changer, something that's really going to save them. I don't think anyone particularly bought into it in Swansea, either at the club or, you know, the fans or anything like that. I don't think they all bought into it and said, yeah, this is the big appointment. This is going to get us out of it. You know, a bit like Allardyce with Sunderland. So I think it's kind of a testament to sometimes it's all in players' heads. All you need is someone to come in and just tweak the mentality, tweak the perception, tweak the self-perception, and you can really sort of go from there, because they've not been beating bad clubs, they've been beating good teams, they've been picking up points, and you can see them surpassing Leicester easily in terms of the games Leicester have, which are going to look agonising for the next 8 games, and the games Swansea have. You think easily Swansea could climb up into that mid-table position and just have a season where they almost forgot they were almost going down.
Yeah, well, you look at
Clement as a manager, though. Like, I know he's not done a huge amount of being the main guy in charge, but he's been involved in some of the biggest clubs in the world now, and knowing how to make winners.
It was always a case of a bit of the Steve McLaren question: been a great second, is he good enough to be cut out as a first? And from the looks of it so far, yeah, he really is. If your job as a manager is to get your team playing well, to get them winning games, to inspire them to be good footballers, he's doing that. Simple as that. So, yeah.
I don't always... Like, the Steve McLaren one is always the sort of the thought of as a number two that can't become a number one. But then you've got other guys like Pep Guardiola or Mourinho. You know, they were number twos at clubs.
Yeah.
I really hope he turns out to be a Mourinho or Guardiola, just so we have a good English manager.
I think when you look at the players he's brought in, though, he's not brought in any like big stars or anything, but he's brought in Narsing from PSV, Tom Carroll's coming from Spurs, Olsen and Ayew, and I think Carroll in particular is the main one, because he was saying before how he wants to get back to that Swansea way of playing, you know, that that really good football we saw a couple of seasons ago, and he wants to get back to that. He's not really brought in anyone you think of as a big star, you know, that guy who's going to score a load of goals to get him to safety or, you know, something like that, which you'd expect. He's gone for players, and it clearly looks like he's building a team. Even if they get relegated, I think he'll stay at the club, and I think he's looking to build something rather than just a quick fix. All right, we'll move on. I want to talk about Leicester as well. Leicester have said that they'll stand by Ranieri with unwavering support. Do you think that he obviously won the title last year? But do you think at some stage they've just got to tell Ranieri to leave, or do you think he just has to stay at the club for as long as he sees fit?
They can't sack him. It's a case of yes, if he didn't win the league last year, he'd probably be sacked. But at the same time, he pulled off possibly the greatest surprise in football history. It's up there. And I was speaking to a Leicester fan today, and he was saying he doesn't think that if they hadn't won title last year, Ranieri would be getting sacked, because if last year the intention was to finish 17th place and survive and then sort of grow from there, then what they're doing now is more or less part of the course. They're looking at last year as being the exception to the rule and an opportunity missed out this year, but basically a continuation of how things used to be. In which case, what was Ranieri hired for? Was he hired to win the league? No, he was hired to keep his side safe from relegation, to keep him being a steady Premier League club. And yes, things are looking very bad at the moment, and it is possible they could go down. And if they go down, yes, I do think he should probably lose his job for that. Especially considering that is a hell of a climb down. But at this stage, I think you give him the benefit of a doubt. Because it would be the biggest example of all that's wrong in football if he lost his job now. Because if we're talking about fickle decisions, where a manager's doing all right one year and then he's sacked the next year, like Gary Monk or someone like that, you'd have to say this just takes the biscuit, doesn't it? Winning the Premier League with Leicester, and you do not get any credit for that. You get what? Just over half a season's worth of credit before that all expires? Come on, it's Leicester. It's not like this is Man United potentially going down here. This is a side that you would have said last year should have been fighting relegation. So the fact they're fighting relegation this year, it's not a massive surprise, is it?
They have spent $70 million on players, though, in the summer.
Yeah, but who doesn't spend money these days in the Premier League?
Not to that degree. That's still a top six money spend.
Yeah, I can buy that there is a lot of reasons why he should get sacked, but if you're weighing them up against the reasons he shouldn't, which is he won the Premier League with Leicester bloody City, that just outweighs all of them. I've spoken to quite a few Leicester fans, actually, and there's so few saying, yeah, he really needs to go. And we're not talking about the real mental Leicester fans who are just touched in the head, who are going on Five Live because they're the only people who get put through because it's a little bit controversial. I'm talking about the actual common sense, rational Leicester fans who are just saying, no, that's just absurd. So,
I totally don't think he should be sacked. The players need to be looking themselves in the mirror.
Mm, yeah, for me, this is more down to the players than the manager.
The likes of Mahrez and Jamie Vardy that now are just sitting pretty on the $100,000 a week.
Mm.
And they're just not putting a shift in anymore.
They've taken their foot off the pedal massively and thought they were going to be out of coast this season, probably finish 6th or 7th or maybe get a European spot, and then no one's going to say, oh, what a tragic fall. They'll just go, oh, that's pretty good. That's a clear bit of progression for Leicester City from where they were before they won the league. So, and I think they took for granted their position. The plus side is, if Leicester do get relegated, all of these big contracts that a player's got put on, they got a massive 40% wage drop if they get relegated. So, enjoy that.
Do you think
it shows how important to Leicester Kante was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree that he was massively important to what they do, because he was the sweeper in front of the defence. And when you've got a defence that is immobile as, you know, Hoof and Morgan, you need someone who's going to be able to do that, because otherwise you've got no link from midfield to strikers, because you've got Danny Drinkwater sitting so deep. So yes, it's made a big difference. I think it's more mentality more than anything, though. They kept most of their players, and they improved the squad in terms of the signings they made. I just think they've...
Yeah, look at the difference Kante's made to the Chelsea side this season.
Well, again, but how much do you put that down to Conte, and, you know, the fact that Hazard's playing well again, the fact that Costa's playing well again? I think, don't get me wrong, it's probably like 30% Kante, but I think it is mostly in the players' heads. I think it's just... It's maybe complacency, it's overconfidence. I can't quite put my finger on what exactly it is, but for some reason, they started the season like they didn't really need to try too hard, and now they're getting to a point where they're just stuck in a rut and can't get out of it.
I think also the fact that last season the teams were up against them and didn't really understand how Leicester works, even though, you know, they went through the season doing it. And now this season, everybody knows how Leicester were going to play, and they've adapted to it.
But the manager keeps changing his tactics. He's tried a diamond, he's tried, you know, like a 4-2-3. He's tried different formations and different styles, and nothing seems to be working. I think he's trying all he can.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's being a bit erratic with his tactical changes, but he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. If he doesn't change things, people are going to say, we don't have Kante anymore, we can't play that style of football, because it was entirely dependent on winning the ball in defensive midfield and quickly breaking with a Danny Drinkwater pass. But he's changing everything, and he's trying continuously to change things because he knows the things he's changing to aren't working after he's tried them out, and people are going, oh, you have to stop changing. All right, so he stops changing, and then he sticks with what he's doing at one point, and it still doesn't work, and everyone's going to go, oh, he's got to change things. It's the case when you're down at the bottom, people will find anything to nitpick. I think Ranieri's not done masses and masses wrong. He's just not had the right level of nuance this season to be able to adapt to the position he's in. I think it's as simple as that, and that's a problem a lot of managers have these days. You look at Van Gaal at Man United, he just didn't adapt to the fine nuances of the Premier League, I don't think. And especially that season after they got Champions League, he didn't adapt to the mentality that was going to be in the squad from that point. So it's tiny, tiny things, I think, and it's made just a colossal difference to Leicester. And you throw in the fact that other teams who should have been doing well last season are doing better. They've picked up their game. It's not a massive shock as to where they are, but if they went down, it would completely undermine everything they did last year. It wouldn't be the story of the Leicester fairy tale, it would be the rise and fall of Leicester. That would be the story at that point. The legacy of winning the league is completely lost.
I just want to ask one final question. Jamie Vardy and Mahrez both linked with like big clubs, you know, with Arsenal and all that. I've had offers. Either way, I suppose, do you think that the clubs will still be interested in those two players come the end of the season, and do you think they would leave Leicester to move on?
I think both of them would go now. I don't think they'll have the demand that they had last season, though.
They won't have the really top clubs interested, you know, your Real Madrid's, who, you know, Mahrez was speculated to be going to. But you've also got to remember, Aston Villa paid £12 million for that Scott Hogan fella. Money in football is ridiculous, and clubs will buy anyone if they get into enough of a panic. And there'll be enough clubs in the Premier League, and maybe even abroad, who will take a look at Mahrez and Vardy and go, shit, we're in the last week of the transfer window. Oh, he's good. He had a good season. We can get him back to that. And there's spunk £20 million, because these days, what does £20 million get you in a transfer market?
Vardy, £20 million now.
It's a case where it sounds ridiculous, because most of us have probably still... Yeah, most of us have still probably got the mentality of football about 10 years ago, where £20 million is a lot of money, but it's piss all these days. For a Premier League club to buy a proven Premier League player, it's piss all. £20 million.
Well, it's like £14 million or something, and he was older than Vardy at the time, Sunderland.
Yeah.
Vardy's... Defoe, I think, was 32, and he was £14 million, and...
Mm. And you imagine if Arsenal sold Jack Wilshere. I think most people would say that he probably shouldn't go for more than £20 million, and that would be about right, considering his injuries and all that lot. Arsenal would still look for £30 million for him. They still would. The money in football is ridiculous, and the problem is, we just haven't really adapted to it. We still think in terms of, you know, Zidane, that's a massive amount of money, but for the money in Premier League these days, it's almost like the average fee has to be around £10 million at least, so what's Vardy going to fetch?
Well, I think, moving on, it takes us quite nicely onto our last point. Hull, who saw, I know we spoke about it last week with transfer deadline day, but they got like £22 million for Livermore and Snodgrass. And, you know, they're decent players, but they're not that sort of level players. But yeah, I just want to ask about them as well. Also changed their manager, Marco Silva replaced Mike Phelan. I think at the time people thought maybe it was a bit harsh on him, but Marco Silva's done a good job.
He's done all right, and I think it's a massive case of they tried to patch things up as best they could without much optimism as to what he would actually do for the club, and it's actually working out well. It was clear they were trying to sell off their biggest players to get the money in before they lost their value, I think. I don't think that was some big idea they had to sell these players and think we'll get better players in. Maybe these guys are disruptive. They sold some of their best players to make money. It's just worked out rather well. I still think they're going to go down, because you look at the bottom now, you look at the bottom, what, 5-6 sides? Three of them got to go down. With Hull, you do think it's more likely to be a flash in the pan than with Swansea. It just seems like that from the way they're playing. It's not like they've suddenly revived the way they're playing and they're playing some really good football now and they've got a hell of a lot of get up and go. They've had more of that, but they've also had the luck. They've had the good fortune, and that makes a massive difference. But it always means that sometimes you can have the managerial bounce that acts as the flash in the pan, and then it can just go badly. At the end of the day, some of these sides have to go down. And you've got 2 points in it up until 15th. If your money's on anyone, it's got to be Hull as one of those sides.
Which three do you think will go down, Hero?
Let me have a look at the table.
So you've got Middlesbrough, Leicester, Swansea all on 21, Hull 20, Crystal Palace, Sunderland both 19. And then
it's quite congested, isn't it, now, really?
Mm-hmm. My bet would be Middlesbrough.
I'm surprised at, and I don't think they're out of it, which Shane won't particularly like me saying, but Southampton only 7 points off.
I don't disagree with you at all. I don't disagree with you at all. I think we are in real danger of slipping into. We can't bloody score. We used to be able to defend, but we've lost Van Dijk. We could get dragged down into it, and that was a genuine worry among Southampton fans, but all the good work we've done in recent years could become undone. At the same time, you think 13 points in 14 games, where we're at, we should be just about right. But there's the question.
You should be, but I think the League Cup final is very much masking over a very bad season so far for you.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've been saying for a while now, I don't want Claude Puel at the club. I am not someone to say, get managers out, but he just seems to be toxic. He doesn't seem to have the players on his side. He doesn't seem to have any real enthusiasm. He doesn't seem to have any tactical nuance, or he's not really adjusting to the way Southampton like to do things. I'm not really sure what he's doing there. In terms of, we've always gone for kind of ambitious managers who are going to, even if they haven't got a big reputation, are going to shake things up a little bit. They're going to bring in the youth players. They're going to try and play a different kind of way. And they've got that ambition that can inspire those players to be ambitious too. We should not even be in question of relegation this season. And even if we win the League Cup, if we finish 14th, 15th, I think Puel has to go. It'll be the first competition we won since, 2003. Now, that was when we were runners-up. It's like 1976. But he would still have to go because there are just no fans who were enthusiastic about him. I think it is a good point. We are in danger and we should not be at all.
Just to defend Puel then, play devil's advocate a bit, he's got a reputation of bringing in youth players, and has he not done a decent job bringing in young players from the academy? I know Sam McQueen's one in particular who stands out.
Yeah, he's done a better job than the likes of Koeman did, because Koeman didn't put too much of a priority on it. But he's not done a better job than what the general standard of Southampton is, and a lot of it has been forced through injuries. I think we've got good young players and they should be getting into the squad, but if we're doing that at the cost of it's all going badly, and it's not all going badly because we're bringing in young players. We proved the first season we got to the Premier League we'd do it, second season, third season, we proved we could do it with the young players. But it's the manager. He's not inspiring these players to be as ambitious as they have been before, and I think that is the basic reason why we are where we are. And yeah, I don't disagree that we are in danger. I think we're probably the least in danger of all of them. My personal bet's on Middlesbrough, Hull and Palace to go down. I think Middlesbrough just don't have the goal-scoring potential to actually be able to stay up, and they do seem to just concede silly goals. So I think I can see them going down. Hull, I think it's a flash in the pan, and Palace just don't seem to have anything about them, really.
I'd like Palace to go down because I just don't like Allardyce. I think Sunderland, Hull, and I'm going to go Bournemouth, even though they're a few points ahead of it. The amount of goals that they're letting in at the moment, I can see them really sort of starting to drop like a stone there.
I'll say Middlesbrough, Leicester, and Palace myself.
So basically, all of us are just completely different.
I think Paul will have enough. But anyway, we'll move on. I want to talk about Liverpool as well. Liverpool there, poor 2017 so far. They're out of both cup competitions, the FA Cup, after losing to Wolves in the League Cup to Southampton. Hull and Swansea have both beaten them as well over the last couple of weeks. What's going so wrong at the club at the moment?
I don't know what it is, but like the one win so far this year has been against Plymouth. And they didn't look particularly great against them.
It took a replay to win as well.
I mean, yeah. People say, oh, that squad shouldn't be doing this badly, and yes, they shouldn't be doing as badly as they are at the moment. But you look at that team, and I'm sorry, it's not really anything special, is it? I mean, you take out Coutinho, and what have they really got? I mean, you can't lean entirely on one midfielder. Maybe you can do it on one striker like Sunderland do, and maybe be alright, but you can't do that if you're going to be trying to compete for stuff. It's not a great squad, and Klopp, as much as he is a good manager, I think the honeymoon period really does have to end with him, because they're just not progressing. If you're looking at what Liverpool should be doing, they'll be saying, this club should be maybe not winning titles, but we should be in a position now where we are potential challengers in the same way Tottenham were last year. There's no reason why we shouldn't be at that level. Other clubs, maybe they aren't as good or they're still in transition. Klopp's not been there a short period of time now. He's been there for long enough to have made his impact, or to make, or made enough of an impact that it would have made a difference. I mean, how long do managers in the Premier League really get? So for, he's been there for quite a while by comparison. So I think the honeymoon period really does have to end, and they kind of need to start judging it a bit more, what's actually happening on the pitch, rather than, you know, isn't Klopp such a wonderful, nice guy? Yeah, I'm sure he seems like a really nice guy. He's the kind of manager everyone wants at their club, but you can't coast on that forever.
I think centre-back's obviously still a big issue for Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of them look particularly great. If you were going to pick a team based around, you know, the best of the top six, would a Liverpool player get in it?
Maybe Coutinho, maybe.
Is he the best attacking midfielder option?
Mane is.
I'd, like I said, maybe.
Well, you'd have Mane over Hazard.
I'd play Mane and Hazard. Oh, no. I guess not, maybe not. No, I was thinking Mane and Hazard on the wings, but no,
Hazard
I would.
Hazard and Sanchez is left wing options. Would you put Mane above either of those two?
No, I don't think you can you?
I'd probably put Eriksen ahead of him this season in terms of Coutinho, because Eriksen's been fucking top draw.
So that's that, you know, he's down to fourth best now out of six clubs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Liverpool.
He's their best player.
Yeah, I mean, if you do it with Liverpool, especially if you do it with their defence, and you look at those players and you say, if they were to move clubs, what kind of club would they move to? What level would they move to? And I think maybe like a fourth-placed Italian side is as good as they could do. I don't think they're not like maybe Sevilla or something like that. They wouldn't go anywhere beyond Liverpool. Liverpool's kind of their peak, and it's not even that much of a peak, to be honest. Because you look at what have they got? Lovren, Matip,
Clavan,
Moreno, Klein. Right. There's some decent players in there. I think Klein's a decent player.
Yeah, I'd say if any of the players in the Liverpool squad that could possibly be the first choice out of the top six would be Klein.
James Milner's been fantastic this season.
Yeah, Milner's been good.
You haven't missed the best left back in the Premier League?
No.
This season, I can't think of anyone else. Maybe Danny Rose at a push, but I can't think of anyone else.
I'd go with Danny Rose.
Yeah, certainly have Danny Rose above him.
Yeah, I'd definitely say
Danny
Rose,
which we all obviously agree. I think Danny Rose and Milner are the top two for me. I can't think of anyone else. But I think I'd just about pick Milner over Rose.
Yeah, Milner's been good. Klein, again, he's a good player, but would you put him in above Bellerin or something like that? I personally bloody wouldn't. It is a question.
Above Valencia.
No, people are saying this Liverpool team, it's a real surprise they're doing this badly. Okay, yes, yeah, a surprise they are doing as shockingly badly in this half of the year. Yes. You look at where they are in the table and you look at their squad. Do you say they're overachieving or underachieving? Because I still say they're overachieving. Fifth place for that team is better than they should be doing.
I think they're doing exactly what they should be. So that was my next question on expectations. What should the expectations be? But you look at the table, Chelsea are obviously looking like favourites to win the league, but behind that there's 5 points separating the five clubs, and Liverpool being in that scrap for second is good. I think that's the, you know, those five teams, there's not much between them. It's very little between them. Chelsea's obviously the standout team. I think Spurs are the next best team, but I think between it, you know, at the end of the season they could finish in any order. And I think I don't know what the expectations are. Are they expecting Liverpool to win the league or something? Of course not, they shouldn't be. And I think there should be
Liverpool fans doing that every year.
I think they'd do well to get fifth. That'd be, for me, that squad, even with the manager, fifth is a good position, because that top 7-8 is so ridiculously competitive. Those are all good sides. They've all got good players and good managers. So you look at that side that Liverpool have got, and you say fifth, yeah, that's maybe about right. Maybe they should be behind Man United based on squads. I'd probably say so. But fifth would be not a big shock. I'd be surprised if they got top four. I don't think that squad is as good as top four.
I think if you look on paper, then I would have the Spurs side, the first team wise, on a par with Chelsea.
Hmm.
But they don't have the squad depth.
Hmm.
On paper, United should be better.
I mean, you look at the table right now, and I think switch Arsenal with City, switch United with Liverpool, and that top six, for me, looks about right.
I'd say United should be in that top four, and I know that's biased being me being a United fan, but I would say that the United team is better than Arsenal's.
I'll make the concession, they're only fifth by goal difference.
I think for me personally, I think Tottenham are my favourite team to watch. I think they're second behind Chelsea, and after that it's just too close. I wouldn't want to call because they've all had different spells. I mean Arsenal are in a bad run at the moment as well. They've lost the last two. I know one of them was against Chelsea, but I think after Spurs, for me, there's not really any difference because they've all had their good and bad spells throughout the season.
My favourite team to watch is West Brom.
Man City defence and
shocking. My favourite team to watch is West Brom and Burnley. They're actually really entertaining to watch those games. Don't knock it.
Who'd ever think of West Brom?
They're playing good football. They are playing very good football this year.
A Tony Pulis West Brom.
Hey, he could have done it at Stoke. You didn't need Mark Hughes.
I agree with you on Burnley, though, as well. The good thing about Burnley is you know what the result's going to be, especially if they're away. all right, we'll move on.
John Dash.
wait, say good evening in that voice.
Good evening.
Okay, we'll move on to the second round of the quiz. So over to you, Shane.
Alrighty then, it's very similar to the first round. Name the 10 highest ranked Football League sides that have never played in the Premier League. Richard, you're going first.
Huddersfield.
Yes, that's one.
Barnsley? Surely they didn't play in the Premier League.
Barnsley have played in the Premier League.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
Nick's favourite, Brighton.
Well done, that's a very obvious one, but yeah.
But Burton, there's no way they've played in the Premier League and they're in the Championship, so...
Well, I hate to tell you this, but that is correct. Well done, Burton. They've never been in the Premier League.
I was going to try and do the accent, but I can't. But I do like the accent. Bristol City.
Bristol, yep.
So pretty much anyone in the Championship should be like... I can't imagine Rotherham. I can't imagine them in the Premier League.
Yep, Rotherham. Never been in the Premier League.
I thought you said the Premier League then.
The club that often gets picked up by filters for swearing. Scunthorpe.
Scunthorpe. Well done.
This is some Swervey Championship set. I don't know if there's any others. It's pretty difficult, this. Brentford.
Ooh, that is just about kept you in the game. Well done, they've never played in the Premier League. Right, Hero, if you get this, you win.
I don't think there's any left in the Championship, is there?
There is one left in the Championship. Dun dun dun.
Preston.
Well done. Yep, Preston. They've never been in the Premier League. They're one of the founding members of the Football League, but never been in the Premier League. So, Hero, that's 2-0. That's a decisive win. What are your thoughts? How excited are you? Who do you thank for this great victory?
David Moyes, because I suddenly thought of Ben with Preston.
Well, you wouldn't have expected that. Well, thank you, David Moyes.
he was doing so... Didn't he make the playoffs something like 3 years running?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was something like that. The other two you could have had were Fleetwood and Southend.
Oh, right. Okay, I guess I've got a reasonable knowledge of the Football League because of the 72 show, but I've just got no clue about history of the Premier League, really. I think that's what killed me.
Yeah, it was a tough quiz.
Yeah, no, it was a good quiz. It was very good.
like, obviously, I'm older, so I can remember sort of like the teams that were up and down in like the 92-93 sort of season, like the ones that dropped away just before the Premier League started.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think Swindon went down in the first year of the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like ones like that.
Yeah, good knowledge anyway. All right, we'll move on. I just want to briefly mention the African Cup of Nations. Not sure if anyone cares about it, to be brutally honest. Cameroon won. I don't know if anyone watched any of it. They scored a winner, last minute winner. Abu Bakar scored a last minute winner against Egypt to win it.
You know, I like it. How Liverpool's Joel Matip decided to retire from playing for Cameroon and miss out on winning the cup with them, so he could turn up for some of Liverpool's magnificent performances so far this year.
You look at how he defends. If he had been in the Cameroon side, they'd have lost.
Have you seen some of the defending out of the African nations, though?
No, thankfully. I did not watch any of that. I have to say, I'm an international football aficionado. I've watched like the last three Copa Americas. I've even watched the Asian Nations Cup. I do not give a shit about the African Cup of Nations. It is such low quality that it's not worth watching. It's crap.
Well, I saw Neom as well, the Watford player, Watford right back. He said that even if they'd have told him before the tournament Cameron's going to win and he's not part of the squad, he said, I don't mind because I'm happier playing for my club. It's much more important to me. So I think that says it all. Do you think it's a bit of a shame, though, that you have this African Cup of Nations during the season? Because you look at players like, you've got this Matip controversy, you've got Sadio Mane, and you've got a few other players missing for their clubs. Do you think it's something that maybe should have a rethink?
It should have
it's
a rethink.
It's good, though, isn't it, though, with Africa, because it's bloody hot there.
Yeah.
Is it?
They've got to base it on when their leagues start and finish, and on when, you know, the seasons are actually right to be able to play football. And
yeah,
as much as you might consider...
World
Yeah, you might consider shifting it, mainly because the majority of the African footballers are not playing domestic football in Africa. That's the only reason they should consider it, but then you've got the problem of the conditions are just not going to be accustomed to players who are used to playing in Europe, which is where the majority of them are. So you'll probably have a lack of quality because of that, regardless of whether or not you play after the football season. And it's almost a case of, if the football season's on, you're more likely to have people go and watch the African Cup of Nations, because if it's in the summer, they will just completely forget about it. Whereas, on the other hand, they've still got their football brain switched on, and they're still actually paying attention to BBC News. And so they occasionally see the updates and might think, oh, I might watch a game. So I think it can go either way. It's just irrelevant either way.
The only alternative you could do with it is basically have it in South Africa in the summer, whenever, you know, every 2 years. Because South Africa will be in the winter then anyway, Southern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a country within Africa that could host it.
That's far too practical. They have to switch it between countries every other year and give it to another war-torn place owned by a dictator.
It wasn't even meant to be in Gabon, was it, this time?
Nope.
And it had to be quickly moved. But most of the countries in Africa can't even host a tournament. And most of them are too hot.
Well, did you see did you see some of the pitches they played on? They were absolutely disgraceful. I've seen pictures and that, and it was terrible, some of the pitches, because they're just not suited. They can't do it.
Yeah. So South Africa's pretty much the only country in Africa that's got the infrastructure and the climate to do it.
But you've also got to remember that most other countries in Africa despise South Africa. We sometimes forget about that over in Europe because we just don't really pay enough attention, but... Everyone hates South Africa. Absolutely everyone hates
South Africa. Everyone in the world hates South Africa.
Yeah, it's just their bloody accents. No, there's a lot of deep-seated political reasons why everyone hates South Africa. But yeah, they would never agree to that. It's too practical.
Okay, so don't accuse us of not covering world football properly, because, yeah, we cover the African Cup of Nations. That was our review.
So positively.
Next week, we're starting an Oceania special.
New Zealand won, shock.
You fancy hosting that one, Richard?
Even that my knowledge, hipster knowledge, does not go that far. Actually, I did watch Melbourne at the weekend.
Wasn't there something about, there was some, was that a big game or something? I remember reading something about it. So?
Yes, it was, yeah.
What happened? What was it? I can't...
It was just an absolute storm of a free kick that won it for him, and it was, the swerve on it was just unbelievable. I think it was Tim Cahill playing back over there.
I think, yeah, wasn't he sent off before he was even brought on the pitch?
Yeah, I've read that somewhere.
I love Tim Cahill, though. That goal of the World Cup was just sublime.
All right, just to finish the show, I want to talk about our young 11. So every week we're putting a poll on Twitter to select one position each week for the young 11. So we started off with goalkeepers. Our four nominees for the first week: Jordan Pickford, Laurius Karius, Manchester City's Angus Gunn. Yeah, we were struggling for keepers. And Jack Butland. Of those four goalkeepers, who do you think should be in the young 11 before I announce the result?
Butland.
Yeah.
Okay. I also voted for Butland, but based on his form this season, the winner is Jordan Pickford with an amazing 72% of the vote. Butland got 23%, Karius only 3%, and Angus Gunn. I think 2% of our followers are Manchester City fans.
It's not really surprising because Butland's been injured most of the season.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so a really good response actually on Twitter. We got 1,155 votes, which is a lot more than we often get on our polls. So yeah, really pleased with that. And Jordan Pickford is the first name on our team. So the second player we're going to look at, right backs. So the rules of this is they've got to be playing the Premier League and they've got to be 23 or under. So have you guys got any thoughts on who you think should be nominated?
Bellerin.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't argue. Bellerin has to be a favourite by a country mile.
Are there any other players? Because we need four nominees for Twitter.
Alexander Arnold fella, he seems pretty decent. He seems like he could one day play for Fulham.
He's played all right, hasn't he, in the few games he's played for Liverpool?
Yeah, I can see him in a Fulham shirt.
It seems like Fosu Mensah, he looks a good player. I don't know if right back will eventually be his position, though. That's often where he comes on for United.
Mm.
But I think it's just because giving some game time.
A couple of others I've got written down: Callum Chambers, Sam Byram as well, who moved to West Ham from Leeds, and there's a couple of others. Javier Manquillo plays for Sunderland, and Moses Odubayo of Hull. I think for me it's either toss up between Sam Byram and Callum Chambers for that fourth spot, if we're putting in Alexander Arnold and Fosu Mensah.
Chambers is crap. He is a bit crap.
He did not live up to that transfer, did he?
No, we managed to do very well from that. The irony is, I think if he stayed at Southampton, he'd have nailed down that right back spot or got moved up into defensive midfield, and he'd have probably done fairly well for himself because he'd have been doing regular football at a club that were actually confident in playing him. I think he's just been completely mishandled. He was not one of those outstanding young talents that you just let loose. He's one you have to very carefully nurture, and he has just not had that at all. And he's been
Luke
been shit.
Okay, well, I think based on that, we'll put Sam Byram in then. So the poll will go up on Twitter, and it's Hector Bellerin, Alexander Trent-Arnold, Timothy Fosu Mensah, and Sam Byram. So vote on Twitter, and we'll announce the winner next week.
Mystic Shane will predict that Bellerin wins.
Do you think it'd be more than 72% of the vote?
Holgate class right back, or is he centre back?
Do you think Mason Holgate should be in over one of those four?
No.
I think he's better than him, but I don't know if he's more of a centre back.
He's kind of a centre back, isn't he? I don't know, he's one of them. I think it's hard. I guess Callum Chambers, though, is another one we could argue either way. But yeah, another name into the mix, but we'll keep it to those four. Okay, just before the end of the show, is there anything else either of you would like to mention or discuss or anything?
We're shit.
Okay.
Not us.
No, Southampton. Southampton.
Oh, right. I thought you were...
For anybody who forgets... But like everyone who thinks, oh, Southampton's a really well-run club, and oh, they do well every year and they get better. No, not every year. Don't forget, we went down not so long ago. We're crap this year. And if we win the League Cup, it will completely mask over how utterly crap we've been. But I'll celebrate like it's winning the Premier League, because I don't think I'm going to see Samson win that many trophies.
Can I just ask you a question? All the time, clubs get criticised for not playing full-strength teams in the Cups and being unambitious. If Southampton win the League Cup and finish 17th in the table, is that not better because they've won something? I know, because it's the other way around. You know, every week, you see, every time there's a Cup game, we see, oh no, Bournemouth didn't play a full-strength team, they made 10 changes. Do you think maybe look at it the other way?
That would be true if we were shit. We're only shit this year, we've been improving every single year and getting better, and if we suddenly took a massive, colossal backward step, it would pretty much derail all of that. We wouldn't be able to attract the kind of players that we actually need to attract to replace the kind of players we've got. So that would kind of screw us, I think, completely. So no, I wouldn't take that. I'd be happy with it, because we won a title, but then I would be very sad immediately after that. So, yeah, balance.
Okay, alright, no worries. Just a couple of things I'd like to mention, then before we finish. Chris Lappin's interviewing former Arsenal player Perry Groves. That interview will be up on the V2 Football. We also had Craig Hinton on the 72 show this week, former Northampton captain. He was a really good guest, really, really interesting show. There's also the Ash and Al podcast you can check out and vote in our polls on Twitter. You can follow us at V2 Football, check out our website, v2football.com. And if there's nothing else, it's good night from me and good night from Shane Lees and Richard Hero Hudson. Good night.
Night.
Good night.